Gleich geht's los mit dem On the Way to New Work Podcast und hier kommt die ganz kurze Werbeunterbrechung. Und ich habe ein Briefing bekommen, aber ich schmeiße es mal wieder komplett über den Haufen. Sorry, liebe Telekom, aber mir ist das zu wichtig. Also, ich bin Telekom-Kunde seit, ich glaube, seit ich 17 bin oder sowas. Ich habe meinen Handyvertrag seit 98 und genau die gleiche Nummer und ich bin seitdem bei der Telekom. Wer jetzt sagt, uff, wie kannst du nur, sage ich ganz klar, ich bin zur Telekom gegangen, weil ich wusste, die kümmern sich darum, dass sie das Netz konsequent weiter ausbauen. Und Kommunikation war für mich das Allerwichtigste. Ich konnte telefonieren, ich konnte jeden anrufen, jederzeit. Das ist heute gefühlt normal. Damals war das relativ anstrengend hinzubekommen. Und jetzt hat die Telekom eine Kampagne ins Leben gerufen, die heißt Hashtag dabei. Und was macht die Kampagne? Es geht der Telekom darum, ihr seid das, wo ihr dabei seid. Und die Telekom möchte eben die Zukunft für alle mitgestalten, gerade die digitale Zukunft mit den Chancen und Möglichkeiten. Es soll niemand zurückgelassen werden. Ganz Deutschland soll tatsächlich am Fortschritt teilhaben. Das ist nicht so einfach hinzubekommen. Ihr wisst, wir sind ein Riesenland, es gibt super viele Gemeinden, es ist noch nicht jedes Dorf erschlossen, jede Stadt erschlossen und daran arbeitet die Telekom. Und ich kann das jetzt nur aus meiner Perspektive sagen, das ist wirklich, wie ich das sehe, ich verlasse mich da drauf, ich fahre damit echt gut und ich finde es großartig. Es wird wahnsinnig viel Geld ausgegeben. Es sind einige Milliarden pro Jahr. Schaut euch also mal diese Kampagne an. telekom.de/dabei und unterstützt das. Wir brauchen das in Deutschland und es ist großartig, dass es ein Unternehmen gibt, was das Ganze wirklich vorantreibt. Jetzt viel Spaß mit der neuen Folge.
Willkommen zum Podcast On the Way to New Work. And surprise, surprise, it's not Christoph and it's not Michael. but
Caesar and Christoph.
Yes, we're doing it together again. And I'm speaking English because we have such a special guest today. And it's John Strelecki.
Thank you for the invitation to be here.
We're at the Freitag Hotel in Hamburg, and you offered us to sit in your very nice hotel room, I have to say.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a beautiful place. They do an amazing job here.
It's Monday morning, and it feels very relaxed. Michael is still in New York, and he's so sad that he couldn't make it, because you're the author of... I wrote two books. It's in English. It's called The Y Cafe, I think.
Right.
Café am Ende der Welt,
yeah.
In German.
Yeah, Café at the Edge of the World, yeah.
And
The Big Five for Life,
which made a big change to my life, I have to admit.
Yeah. So, which I read last week.
Fantastic, thank you.
So
thank
it feels you. It feels interesting to sit here and finally have a person and meet someone who wrote that.
The guy behind the pages, there
That's
you
right.
go.
Thank you so much. So, yeah, it's so good that Caesar's here actually, because us doing the podcast together is a bit different than Michael and myself. So we just let it flow and let the energy come within the hour we have with you. And the usual start we do is the question, how do you become the person who you are today?
49 years of a work in progress, let me tell you, yeah. From how far back? I mean...
You choose.
Wherever I want to go. I think every life has significant defining moments. Probably one of the most defining for me was when I was graduating from a university degree. So I had wanted to be a pilot. That was my dream coming out of high school, high school going into university. And then through a series of unusual medical circumstances, I ended up having to lose that dream after I had invested countless time and countless money in that dream, basically every penny I had ever earned. And then it was gone. And so I didn't know what to do for a year. It was a very challenging year, but I ended up going and someone recommended, why don't you go back to school? And I was like, oh, seriously? That was not sounding so good. But I did, and I ended up getting an MBA and then heading off into the work world for that. But before I began my work part of that, I took a month off and went down to Costa Rica and with a buddy of mine. And that was the first time I'd ever traveled overseas. And my life leading up to that point was nonstop. You know, I was trying to make it as a professional athlete. I was going to school at night. I was working full time. And so literally every moment of my day was scheduled. And this experience of going and backpacking around a Central American country where people are so chill, right? And the experience in Das Café, talking about Mike sitting on the beach in Costa Rica, watching the waves come upon the shoreline, and realizing that that had been going on for millions, if not billions of years, and therefore, wow, so how important are my little problems, right? That was actually the experience that I had, and that's, I was 28 years old at the time. And that was the very first time ever that I asked myself, so if all the things I thought were so important really aren't, then what is? And in that context, why am I here? Like, what am I supposed to be doing with my life? So that was really, I think, the first main tipping point, the main catalyst, which has led to us sitting down today, right? All the books and all the rest of that. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And the amazing thing is I remember I came back from that trip and it was so life-changing in so many ways. And I came back and I was at the airport waiting to get picked up. And I had a journal with me and I wrote in my journal, never forget that this exists, you know, down there, these experiences, etc. And I wish I could tell you that from there on, it was just like always in flow. But for the next 5 years, I probably forgot it existed. And fell right back into the rat race. But, you know, it was a turning point in my life without a doubt. And it was interesting because sometimes you have these little seeds of experiences and then it grows into something else. So it was 5 years later that I decided I need to leave it all behind. And that's when I went off and backpacked around the world for a year. But had I have not done that first trip, there's no way I would have done the second big trip. You know? So sometimes we start with the small little sample, but that's what gives us the taste of what is yet to come. So.
Okay. I was wondering when I read the book last week and I was reading about you and I heard another podcast. And if we think about new work, there must be something like old work.
Yeah. Great point.
And what was the environment you grew up in concerning work? What did your parents do?
Yeah.
Did they like work? Did you think, oh, great, I'm going to be like them? And, you know, all the things that come up with this.
Yeah. So my dad was a small town dentist. And so I had a very small little office. We lived outside of a city, but we were far enough outside of the city that it, like, there were farms between our house and, you know, the next area that you would get to. So it was quite small. And had an office with no windows. His dream was always in his life to have an office with a window, and he never did. But so that was interesting, and, you know, you got to see that part of someone else's life. And I remember visiting him as a kid, and, you know, there it was. It was just no windows. There was nothing to see unless you went outside of the office, right? But what I did learn from him was about being an entrepreneur, because when I had a baseball game or there was something going on that he wanted to attend, he was able to arrange his life and his schedule. And I think even as a kid, I realized, okay, that's kind of cool. You know, like, you're not locked into the standard 9 to 5 or 9 to 6. And so I guess on an unconscious level, that resonated with me. I personally started working when I was about 12. I realized very early on that if I wanted to go to university, if I wanted to go do some of these things that were on the horizon for me, that I was going to need more money than was going to be available within the family. Right? And I think as a kid also, you see the way that money impacts people's emotional states. Right? And I didn't want to be a part of the problem. So for whatever reason, I realized very early on I needed to get out there and start earning money. In where I live, you can't just go get a regular job at 12, you know. So, but I ended up doing physical labor jobs because they'll hire you to do that kind of stuff. And I'm not a huge guy to begin with, so when I was 12, I was even smaller. But I learned something very powerful. Not that I would necessarily recommend it for my own kid, but you learn to have a great work ethic and you learn to work hard. And I think one of the things that has enabled me to be where I am in my life is being willing to work hard when the time requires you to work hard. You know, when I write books, it's flow. It's really effortless ease to sit down and type. But when that's done, the editing process is very intensive. And I will go through a book 50 times, right? Conservatively, 50 times. And I will go through every line, every sentence, every word until I'm happy with it. And that work ethic that I learned when I was 12 years old is what enables me to do that. And sometimes people will say, John, would you read my manuscript or my where I'm at with my book? And I tell them, all right, but I'm going to give you brutally honest feedback. Right? And most of the time I will tell you, they're on the scale of A, B, C, D, and F, they're in the middle of the B range, you know? And I say, okay, so it's not bad, right? But once it's out there, you can't take it back. And the first person who reads it, that's going to be their impression of this. So are you willing to put in that extra work to take it to an A? Because that's what's going to make it great, you know? And I think it's a great life lesson that I learned very early on. So I'm not unhappy that I did it, but yeah, it was a tough go.
I'm just like in my mind, I'm just going through our writing process and I think, oh, we thought we had such a good book in 2 weeks.
I can remember it. Yes.
It's actually good.
Yeah. And sometimes you need to step back from your work, you know? So with editing, I will go through it and through it and through it. But then sometimes I just need to put it on a shelf for 2 weeks so that I sort of forget what it looks like. Because you think you're there and emotionally you want it to be there because you're tired of it. You're tired of the editing process. You're tired of the digging in and grinding it out process. And I liken this to being an athlete. You know, my goal, as I mentioned earlier, was to be a professional athlete. I wanted to be a professional beach volleyball player. And playing games is fun. Right? The matches are fun. But running up and down 26 flights of stairs during the wintertime to get yourself in shape is not fun.
It's not.
But that is what gets you to the point where then you can go do the fun stuff. So.
And like going back to your dad and your parents, like learning about work ethic and also from the work you did for yourself when considering the money, how did you see the, like, how did it evolve? Like people talking and thinking about old work, like doing the work and the new work, which is not also fun all the time, obviously, but how did that change over time? And you, like, you shaped that with your books, obviously, but
You know, I had a very profound experience when I was about 21. So around that time is when this dream of being, my dream was to become a pilot. And it's interesting how life takes you in different directions. I really only had the dream because what I really wanted to do was to be free. I wanted the ability to chart my own course and to have a lot of time off, and I wanted to go see the world, right? But the only pathway that I knew of at that point to do that was, and going back even further when I was 17, I knew that airline pilots could arrange their schedules so that they would fly for 4 days on and have 3 days off. And if you structured it the right way, you'd do 4 days on, 3 days off, 3 days off, and then 4 days on. So you could have an entire week off. Like, and then you had free airline tickets to go wherever you wanted. And I was like, this sounds like nirvana, right? And it's so fascinating about how your understanding is such a limitation to what you think is possible. Because now I realize there are 1,000 ways to be free. There are 1,000 ways to go travel the world, right? But that was all I knew. And so that was the great big dream. And then when that got pulled away from me through no fault of my own because of a medical condition, I was like, again, about 21 years old. I graduated college early. And I was driving this very old beat-up car, and I was trying to figure out, what am I going to do now, right? And so I was driving down the highway in Chicago in January or February. It was freezing cold, right? And I was going to my job as a waiter, which was a horrible job. But this was me trying to figure out, what the heck am I going to do now that my dream has been stripped away from me? And I was driving, I'll never forget this, I was driving down this highway, I-80, outside of Chicago. And all of a sudden, I see smoke coming out from the hood of my car, right? And I'm like, well, this can't be good. So I pull over on the side of the highway, and the cars are just whizzing by me, you know, like doing, you know, just flying by me. And it's January or February. It's freezing out. You know, it's way below zero.
That's scary.
Yeah. And so I jump out of the car. I pop the latch for the hood, and I go there, and I lift it up. And there's smoke just billowing out of the hood. And I'm like, oh, my God, my car is on fire. So I'm like, my car is on fire. And so I'm trying to think of, well, how am I going to put out the smoke, right? And so in my frenzied state, I run around to the trunk. I open up the trunk, and I'm looking for water. And I grab the first liquid that I find, and I unscrew the cap, and I run around to the front, and I dump it on the engine. But what I had grabbed was antifreeze, which is primarily alcohol. This is not a good thing to put on a hot engine block that is smoking. And so within seconds, I went from a smoking engine block to an inferno of flames, right? So now it's just like whoosh, and all the cars that are flying by me are honking as if to let me know that my car is on fire. Like I would have missed that somehow, right? I'm standing right there. And so now I'm like, oh my God, how do I put this out, right? And I somehow remembered that a kitchen fire, like you have to get like flour or, you know, something like that. Mm. I'm like, dirt. I need dirt, right? Yeah. And I am on my knees scrambling to find dirt on the side of the road in February when it's a frozen tundra, right? And I'm grabbing anything I can hand, rocks, dirt, whatever, and I'm throwing it on the engine block. And after about five or six times, finally the flames go out. And I'm standing there. And I will never forget this. And I thought to myself, something is going to change in my life. Not that I hope something changes or, oh, it'd be nice if something changes, but something is going to change. I have got to figure this out.
This is more than a sign.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is the universe saying to you, okay, here's the 2x4 across your forehead, right? Yeah. Like, you've got to figure this out, dude.
I would say find your fire.
Yeah. And what I needed to figure out, looking back now so many years, what I needed to figure out is the way the game of life worked, right? And that was the opportunity that was sitting in front of me. And that really launched me. I can't say that I figured it out like that, but that really launched me on this quest to figure it out. I started reading different books. I started asking different questions. And I have to say, at that point, I wasn't the most self-secure person. You know, I think I struggled to ask questions.
Yeah, who is it in that age?
I guess. But that kind of experience propels you to overcome your fears and start asking the questions, or at least to look into other scenarios that you may have felt uncomfortable with. So, yeah. Crazy. Uh-huh. Chevy Malibu, tan Chevy Malibu. I will never forget the car on fire. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The amazing thing about that story, to further show you how low I was in my life. So I'm standing there on the side of the highway, right? The engine block has now been on fire. But I have no way to get from there to my job, which is a mile and a half further down the road. Mm. And so I literally was like, well, let's see if it'll start. And I got in the car, I turned it on, it started, and I drove a mile and a half down to the job.
Oh, no. Whew.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, even without being on fire, I can imagine there are so many people like in a situation like heading to a job, saying, that's my routine, I gotta do that, and then still being stuck and do that, no matter what it takes. Driving fast, getting crazy Monday morning just because you're on the way to work and you have to be there on time. It's pretty crazy.
It is.
And who was your biggest help?
I think for me at that time, it ended up being people who had written books, to be honest with you. I can't say that there was one person who I looked at their lifestyle, although I highly recommend that now in the work that I do. One of my favorite techniques that we teach is, it's not about how do you go from where you are to where you want to go. It's who is already there, right? Mm-hmm. And learn everything you can about that person. We live in an unprecedented era where you can get on YouTube and watch, you can listen to podcasts, you can read books, you can find out biographical stories. So the information is out there. The paths are out there. The question is simply, are you willing to look and figure out who is your ultimate who's living the life you want to live, who has the dream job, who has the lifestyle, and then are you willing to do the tough nuts and bolts work like we talked about of digging in, find out everything you can about this person, and then the courage to start modifying your life to move in those types of directions. But if you do it that way, instead of saying, well, how do I get from here to here? Like, if you find your who's and just start imitating, you rapidly accelerate your path. But I think for me back then, and again, this is way before YouTube and way before podcasts, it was a few books that started to clue me into, like, there may be alternatives to the way you're thinking and the way you're doing this.
You can lose yourself in doing that. Like, I'm pretty sure there are many people recurringly watching YouTube videos on, like, fixing my life and that stuff, so you can watch fixing your life instead of doing that.
Yeah, be careful you don't become, back in the day it was more seminar based, now it is, be careful you don't become a seminar junkie, right?
Right.
Where every single month you're at the next one, because that's, because you love the way it feels, right? But then if you never do the work, it's never going
to
change.
Because I have to say, I like two books that had a big influence were Your Big Five for Life, definitely. I read that, then I put it aside for years.
Yeah.
The second one was Flow from, I hope I get it right, Mikhail Csikszentmihalyi, which I highly recommend because people tend to think, I just do something that is fun and nice and that's good, but you miss out this challenge part to get flow, what you were describing, like, okay, digging into that, doing that stuff, knowing how hard it is to read a book 50 times again and again.
Yeah.
And then a friend of mine came, we have an entrepreneurship group where we meet once a month. And he said, during our retreat, we do the Big Five for Life. And I'm like, oh, I read that already. But then we worked through it.
Yeah.
Like we did the whole process. And I realized I actually tricked myself in setting them right.
Okay.
Like with the wrong priorities.
Yeah.
And with the wrong top one, two, and so on. And I also realized that different people have like a completely different horizon on what's the Big Five. One can say my top one is, let's say, having windows in my office like your dad did.
Yeah.
Or like having something you can really feel, touch, smell. And I realized it's much more about what I do, the process. So I realized I couldn't live and breathe without a creative process. And I don't do it for the result, but for sitting here Monday morning, recording the podcast, knowing afterwards what's the work behind, edit that, and so on. So what I'm aiming at is the question, like, what is this, how stressed do you have to be when you look in your life and say, okay, I got to change something. And instead of just reading a book, I start doing that. Mm-hmm. I start going, like, what's this spark that you need?
So everybody's different, first of all. Mm-hmm. And the Big Five for Life, just for super fast context for someone who maybe hasn't read the book, it's the five things that you most want to do, see, or experience in your lifetime before you die. Framed in that context, it is the five most important things that will enable your life to be the life that you truly want it to be. Right. And then it's about allocating your time and your energy and your resources, financial and otherwise, towards these five things, whatever they are for you. And you're right, everybody's Big Five for Life are different. And that's a critical point, because it's not about you and I telling each other, well, here's what you should be doing, right? It's about you deciding for yourself, this is what's truly important to me. This is what would make my life my life, right? So then once everybody knows their unique Big Five for Life, then it is this process of, okay, let's get started. Now I find in life that there are sort of one of two things that kick people into gear. One is a near-death experience, right? So they're working the job that is causing them so much stress that they suddenly start to have heart palpitations and they end up in the ER at the hospital, and the doctor says, listen, if something doesn't change, something big is going to change. Right? Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to do this. And this happens to people, right? And it happens because of cumulative effect. Their diet, their lack of exercise, their lack of feeling good in the morning, all of a sudden starts to, the body says, we're done, right? The problem with having a near-death experience is that sometimes you get so close to death that you don't come back, right? This is a big problem. Or your quality of life is diminished significantly. You may have a lifetime ongoing injury or illness because you pushed yourself so far to this edge. So what I much prefer is, instead of having a near-death experience, is to have what I call a near-life experience, right? And this is where you get to sample the things that you feel are your Big Five for Life and start to taste this life, because when you have the taste of it, this can propel you just as effectively towards making this your reality, right? A very small example of this. So if you say, yeah, what I'd really love to do is I would love to go travel, right? Mm-hmm. And in my dream scenario, I go to Hawaii and I spend a month on the beaches swimming with sea turtles, right? Well, fantastic. Instead of waiting and saving and trying to structure your whole life until you finally have the freedom to take 31 days, take a week, right? And I know that sounds so simple, but sometimes we get so caught up in the, no, it's got to be 31 days, that we forget it's possible to sample. Or even better, on a smaller scale, hey, you know what? Allow yourself to watch a YouTube video about what it's like to snorkel or swim with a sea turtle, right? And let the unconscious mind start to experience that on a small scale. Have a conversation with someone who's already been to Hawaii, right? These small things can start to become the catalyst, which at least gets you to Hawaii for the week. And then you've got a really good taste of a near-life experience. And you can say, wow, I can totally see myself doing that, right? And you can apply this technique to anything. You know, whether it's, I want to have more freedom in my job. Okay, well, so find a way to sample that. Where maybe it's, you negotiate with your boss that one Friday over the next 6 months, you're going to work from home. Right? Yeah. I mean, you can find an infinite way of opportunities to sample these things. But when you have these near-life experiences, and conversations with your who's is a great one, right? So talk to like someone who says, wow, I'd really like to have more flexibility, more freedom. They should have a conversation with the two of you and say, well, what is that like? Tell me the good, the bad, and the ugly, right? What makes it spectacular? What's less exciting than you thought it was going to be? And what's tough about this, right? So that you're closer to the reality and you can start to make these educated choices and you can get your body moving in that direction.
What I like about that is it comes close to what Fridtjof Bergman said. He's the inventor of this term New Work in the 70s. He's a philosopher at the University of Michigan. Great guy, 88 years old. And he came up with a term during times when the car workers were let down from the jobs in Detroit when they had a crisis.
Yeah.
And he was asking, one of the questions he was asking them, saying instead of like do something else or go home, okay, let's take 6 months versus 6 months work, 6 months off, 50-50. And we asked the question, what do you really, really want to do in your life?
Yeah.
Which is like, what do you really, really want to do in your life? And he found out that they were struggling with that question because they were never asking that question.
Sure.
They knew. They were caught up in that work. And it's a really challenging question. And I can relate to that because when we did that seminar, we had people in the group who were really struggling because for them it was too philosophical, too like, oh, I cannot do that. And then we were watching one movie in the evening. It's called The World's Fastest Indian.
Yeah.
Dennis Hopper. Is it Dennis Hopper? With Dennis Hopper?
No, it's not Dennis Hopper. It's, I can't think of the actor's name, but yes.
Anthony Hopkins. Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he is fantastic in that movie.
This movie is so good. He has just one goal, being the fastest guy on a motorbike ever. He's from New Zealand. He had to drive to the States.
And like, he's 60-some years old, by the way.
60-something. Yeah. This movie is so good. And there are so many examples in that movie. Like one is he had this lemon tree in the garden. And one of the things he was doing every morning, he was taking a pee every morning in front of that lemon tree. And that one guy in our group said, you know what? I want to have my own garden. I want to have a lemon tree. And I do that every morning just because of that. And I'm like, okay, this example makes it so black and white.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, I'm home, I live here in town, I have neighbors and so on, being nice. And I love that inspiration that you can find out there. But I'm so afraid these days that we have so much inspiration that it's easy to, as I said, like got caught up in that.
Right.
Being inspired all the time.
There is always the yin and yang of everything, right? There's the positive and negative. So the access to technology today enables us to find our who's at a pace and a depth of understanding like we have never been able to in human history, right? At the same time, it can be the ultimate distraction because the algorithms are designed to watch what you look at and then give you more of that and then give you teasers to pull you off of this. And it's not just looking at your brain patterns in the way that you react to this. It's aggregating data from millions and millions of users. So you're up against a huge system that is designed to distract you, right? Because that is how those sites, that is how websites make their money when they're news-based, is by advertising and the more clicks and the more views, right? So yes, this is the balancing act of humanity right now, is are you willing to not get distracted and instead allow yourself to focus on the life that you truly want to live? So yeah, there's always something.
That's right. And how do you find your ground? Like, if you are not grounded, you can't really decide that you want to change.
Yeah.
And it's a really, it can be a very long process, as we all know. So what is your ground, or what do you recommend for people to ground?
So my suggestion is to have non-negotiables, right? And a non-negotiable is where you take a look at your week, your month, however, whatever time frame you want to box it into, and you say, so what are my non-negotiables, the things I will not break in there? And I'll give you an example. So for me, Sundays are the days that I play beach volleyball with my friends, and this is a non-negotiable. If someone says to me, I'd like to do an interview, and they say Sunday is the only day I can do the interview, then we will not be doing the interview. Right? I really don't care who it is. Because Sundays are non-negotiable. Now, there are times when I take a trip, right? So in this case, I'm on the road.
No beach volleyball.
Right. But the good news is that not tomorrow, but the day after tomorrow on May 1st, I'm playing beach volleyball here in Hamburg. So I will make up for my missed Sunday. But in general, this is a non-negotiable. Another non-negotiable is every night I read with my daughter. This is a non-negotiable. We've been doing this since she was 2 years old.
Mm. Right?
And it's something that I look forward to and she looks forward to. And this is what we do, right? And so I have very specific family non-negotiables for me. I have, as I said, volleyball is a personal non-negotiable. And I think it's important for each of us to say, I'm willing to dig in and I'm willing to do the tough work, but I also want to make sure that these specific things that keep me grounded are in my calendar, they're in my diary, and I treat them with the same degree of importance and respect as I do everything else. Because very often, it's easy for us to treat the things that matter most to us with less importance, right? Working out is such the traditional one for people, right? I want to get in better shape, so they book their workout in. But then, you know, there's work to be done, there's emails, and I don't know about you all, but the great danger of all dangers is waking up in the morning, opening up your laptop, and starting to answer email. Because this is like the time warp of all time warps. You start with that first one, and the next thing you know, it's 11:30, right? Because as you're answering that one or two or three that seems most critical, of course, five more critical ones come in, and you never get off of that thing. And so maybe part of your non-negotiable is to say, the night before you figure out, these are the three things I most want to accomplish tomorrow. Right? Because if I do these three things, I will have really made progress towards what matters most to me. And so that next morning, instead of opening up the phone, instead of opening up the laptop, the only thing you focus on is those three things. And when they're done, then you can look at your email. All right? These types of little practices become very useful. When I was writing my last book, I found that I had so much going on that I set a 10-page goal every day. Right? I was going to write 10 pages. I would literally get up, I would take my daughter to school, I would not even shower, I would sit in my chair, and I would write 10 pages, right? And when those 10 pages were done, I could start the rest of my day. So,
How did your big five for life change over the time? Did they change?
Yeah, so the big five for life are flexible in that the goal is to figure out the five things that you most want to do to your experience. And sometimes they're short-term in nature. You may say that I want to do an interview. That might be on someone's list of once in my life I want to do an interview, right? And then when that's done, it's off. And you say, was it so fun that I want to put on my list, I want to do a second interview, right? Or do you then want to put on your list, I want to travel to Bali, right? So it can be flexible in that regard. It often is. There are also other ones that are consistent, maybe for long stretches of time. So number one on my list is to have a loving relationship with the people that matter to me. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I literally think about every day. When I'm putting together, and this is my practice, the night before I always think about what am I doing the next day. And this is a very effective tool for me. And so when I look at my calendar for the next day, I'm saying, okay, so what in that events for the next day are going to help me have loving relationships with the people that matter to me, right? And, you know, this is where the non-negotiables come in. Taking my kid to school, taking my daughter to school is a non-negotiable. I do this every day, right? And so these are short-term in nature, or they can be really consistent. Now, that said, you may have one that is consistent for a long time. Maybe it's something around physical fitness or whatever. And then at some point you may say, I'm good, right? I can take that off my list. But there is this degree of flexibility. And so the choice is up to you when you're going to add something on, when you're going to drop something off, and it's based on how you feel. So, but I would say one thing to be cautious of is the unconscious mind has the desire, which is a core desire, which is to keep you alive, right? Mm-hmm. And that means that it wants to do today what you did yesterday because you're still here, right? This can be very dangerous. This can be very dangerous because it will default to activities that aren't necessarily in your best interest of your big five for life, but ones that are secure and safe, right?
Yes.
So watch that. Am I doing this again today because we did it yesterday? Or am I doing this today because this is really moving me in the direction I want to go?
Or like the experience, I do it for somebody else and I feel better.
Yeah.
That might be again and again and again.
Right, yeah. Because the unconscious mind can trick you into, it's not wasting your time exactly, but it is sort of delaying, right? It's like saying, we'll keep you pleasantly occupied for a while where you're not actually working on this, right? Yeah.
gleich geht's weiter mit dem On the Way to New Work Podcast. Hier kommt der ganz kurze Werbeblock. Und worum geht's? Wir haben was Neues. Und zwar haben wir ja sehr viel Erfahrung gemacht bei Blackboard und dem YouTube-Channel, den wir betreiben, unter meinem Namen, Christoph Magnussen, mit Videoproduktion in den letzten 3 Jahren. Und wir haben jetzt ein Workshop-Format ausgearbeitet, wo wir unseren Kunden beibringen, wie man diese ganze Erfahrung aus Beratung, Videoproduktion, Podcast und so weiter nutzen kann, um die Kommunikation intern, also firmenintern, aufs nächste Level zu bringen. Also anstatt lustige E-Mails zu schreiben, was jetzt alles gerade passiert in der Transformation oder Flyer, und ich will niemandem zu nahe treten, aber das ist vielleicht nicht immer das richtige Medium, denn nicht jeder von uns ist Stephen King, um einen Roman in einer E-Mail zu schreiben, kann man eben Videos nutzen oder Podcasts nutzen, um das Ganze auf eine sehr attraktive Art und Weise intern zu kommunizieren. Das machen wir im Content Creation Program von Blackboard und das Ganze findet ihr unter blackboard.com/contentcreation. Guckt euch das mal an. Wir haben ein Video dazu gemacht mit einem unserer Kunden, ein bisschen geteilt, wie das Ganze abläuft. Ein langer Text, dass man sich durchlesen kann, was es alles gibt. Und ja, wer möchte, kann sich da gerne anmelden. Wir melden uns dann und finden einen Termin und dann geht's los. Also, viel Spaß.
I guess you're married, right?
I am, yeah.
Yes, and I was asking myself, if you sit together with your wife and say, these are my big fives, and how are you? Your big fives? And do you discuss them all the time? Not all the time, but
right.
Once in a while?
Yeah, and so just to clarify, because people sometimes ask me, they're like, all right, so you're talking about these topics. Is this all you talk about? No, I talk about Infinity Wars Part 2 coming out because I love Marvel movies. I have a plethora of topics that I do talk about in my everyday life. But I absolutely do live this and breathe this all the time, right? Because this is what enables me to live the life that I want to live. It doesn't mean anybody else should be talking about it with this degree of frequency, okay. But it's up to you. But we do. And as a matter of fact, for 2019, one of the conversations that we had as a family was, what would make 2019 the best year ever for our lives, right? And so we did a really cool exercise. We each individually spent about 15 or 20 minutes and wrote down a list of all the things that we wanted to do, see, or experience in 2019. Now, we travel a lot as a family because the type of work that I do enables me to travel a lot. And also we travel a lot as a family just for fun. When my daughter was 4.5, we took a year off and we traveled around the world backpacking as a family. And we structured it around animals because my daughter loves animals. And so we went to Africa. To see the animals in Africa. We went to Malaysia to see orangutans in the wild. We went to Australia so she could see koala bears and kangaroos in the wild. Not just her, because I wanted to see that too. So we have really carved out our time to do really amazing experiences in line and in spirit with our big five for life. That said, when 2019 was about to be here, I said, all right, so let's do this and figure out literally what would make this year the best year ever, even in the context of these other things we've done. So we each put together a list of 15 or 20 things, and then we rank ordered them using this really cool tool that is in one of the books that I wrote. And it's not a tool I created, it's somebody else created it, but I get to use it. And so we rank ordered all of these things, and then we looked at our aggregate rank order list. Mm-hmm. So like if you ranked them 1 to 10, and I ranked and you ranked 1 to 10, okay, so of those ranking lists, like which ones are at the top for all of us, right?
Yeah.
And so that is how we planned our 2019. And it's been really, really fun. So one of the trips I'm most looking forward to is going to Alaska, which I've been to before and is absolutely amazing. But I've never seen the bears in the wild. You know those iconic pictures where the bear's like, and it's eating the salmon that are jumping out. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to see that. And so we're going this summer to specifically see that. And it's you do a fly into this place called Kodiak Island. It's very remote. And I've been looking forward to this now literally since the start of January because it's really high on my list. So this is a great little tool, you know, to ask yourself, what would make this week the best week? What would make this year the best year ever? And you can do it with a family, which is really fun because then it gets everybody excited.
What if these goals are not in sync?
So this is really interesting. And it provides an amazing opportunity for relationship dialogue, right? And so maybe what you're going to find is that your partner wants to go on a 1-week yoga retreat to India, right? And you personally have zero desire to do yoga and even less desire to go to India, right? And so then what does this mean? So in an ideal, constructive, communicative relationship, you can have that dialogue. Mm. And you can have it in what I call a raw way, right? So a raw way is where you're willing to say to me, I want to go to India to go on a yoga retreat. And maybe you even say, and I want to go on my own. And I, as your partner, have to deal with the fact that, you know, you want to go on your own and I don't get invited, right? Mm-hmm. But if you can be in that raw open space, then the other person can say, okay, that's got a little sting to it. Let me think about why that stings a little, but at the same time, why do you want to go on your own? And you can engage in this really, really genuine dialogue. The amazing thing about relationships is that conflict usually follows the exact same path every time, right? And I say this from life experience. It's always about one person says something this way, the other person responds this way on this topic, and then the response is here, and then the response to that is here, and then this happens often enough, and then both people leave the room, or one person starts yelling, or a voice is raised, and it's this very predictable pattern, right? But if you can allow yourself to have this raw discussion, you can break that pattern, because then you can really start to understand where the other person is coming from. And you often have to deal with cultural aspects of this, because if you're heading off to India, right, and someone meets your husband and says, well, you know, where is she? She's in India. Is something wrong? Right? I mean, is the relationship, are you guys breaking up, right? No, we just, she wanted to go to India.
Yeah, and we are not twins.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. So I have a buddy of mine, and we've known each other for over 20 years, and every year we take a guide trip, and we disappear for 7 to 10 days, throw our backpacks on. No place we stay can be more than 30 euros a night. And we know we're in the right kind of places when there's no hot water for a shower. Like, I mean, it's out there. It's being true core, hardcore adventurers, which is what we were when we were in our 20s, right? And yeah, to the outside world, they may be like, wow, like, is something wrong with your family? And I'm like, no, this is just what I need to be me, right? Sure. This is what keeps me being the dad that I want to be, the partner that I want to be for my wife, right? So I think these are great things to do, really great things to do. It's just about having that discussion that if there's not sync, maybe there actually is great sync, because maybe on your big five for life list, you say, I want to be in a great relationship. Well, maybe that means you have to let the other person disappear for weeks at a time.
Sure. True.
Give them their own space.
Yeah. That's probably what you loved about them when you met them anyway.
Yeah.
Right? Their independence, their joy of life, their free, charismatic spirit. Well, if you never let that come to life during the relationship, then that's going to disappear.
So, is it that kids have that still built in, that they do the stuff that they want to do?
Yeah.
Just because when you were talking about your daughter, I'm just thinking my daughter is 4, and I of course can relate to the situation you were describing. I was just thinking, well, it's totally different at home with us. And okay, no, I can relate to that. So when we had a discussion, my daughter was then replying, Mommy, Daddy, that's quite easy. Mommy, you just say what you want, and did you just say what you want?
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. True. That's simple.
That
do kids have that still built in, and when do they lose it?
Yeah, they're totally so aware of how simple life can be,
right? And they don't have filters.
They don't, right? They don't have the fears, right? Because the fear in the relationship is that she's disappointed in me. That means I'm not enough, right? It's all this, so many different layers. It has nothing to do typically with the actual moment that's happening, and kids are able to see right through that. Why don't we just talk about it and get past it, and then we can all go to the playground.
Exactly.
And so, which is amazing, because they're at the start of their story, which means they don't necessarily have this awareness of how precious time is, and yet they do somehow, because they're like, let's get past the craziness and get to the fun stuff. And I think there's great wisdom in that. I really do, because life is supposed to be fun, you know? And when we're a kid, we have no issues whatsoever with doing the fun stuff for no other reason than it's fun, right? You run around the playground, nobody is going to give you clicks on your YouTube channel because of that, right? You're not going to get Instagram likes because you were at the playground swinging, but you do it anyway. Well, why do you do it? Because it's fun in the moment.
It feels like good.
The ultimate expression of being present. Yeah. And this is something that we as adults can learn a great deal from. Because often we look at our potential list of activities, and if it doesn't have a payoff other than it was just fun, we don't do it. All right. But at the end of the day, when we're very, very old, I believe what we have left is our stories, right? And if you get to the end of your life, when you've lost the ability to move effectively, you can't do the adventures that you want to do, what you have left are your stories. And if you don't have stories, that's got to be miserable,
right? Yeah, then it won't work with the museum thing.
No, right? So you're not going to want to walk through your museum because there's nothing fun in the museum.
Yeah, right? That's what I learned.
But if you have stories, stories are like, they have recurring value, because when you replay the story in your mind or you retell the story and you laugh again, it's added value.
Just share the museum story for people who maybe did not read the book, but because I love that story also as a pitch for the book, but as a summary of something that it really that pulled me in the last time I did that.
Yeah.
So maybe let's share that. I think it's quite valuable.
Yeah, so the museum concept is that imagine if every moment of your life was recorded, and everything you did, everything you said, the places that you went, the ways you spent your time, and all of this was aggregated into a museum. And then at the end of your life, and the museum would be entirely based on how you actually lived and what you did and what you said. And then at the end of your life, when you pass away, that you become the tour guide for your own museum. Not just for one tour, though. You become the tour guide for your museum for all of eternity. And so this is how people would know that you lived your life. And this is the reality you would be living again and again and again. And so if you spend 80% of your life in ways that are not joyful, then 80% of eternity is going to be spent reliving these non-joyful moments, right? And if you did, if you loved going on a yoga retreat to India, or that was your dream one day, you're either going to walk through the museum and see those flashes where you dreamed of going but never actually went and the regret, or you're going to be able to walk through that wing of the museum where you were in India doing a yoga retreat, right? And this idea that it lasts for all of eternity is what I think really connects people to it. Like, wow, like this is what my life is going to be like. And I love it because it's something that came to me walking through a tiny little museum. Actually, this is, people often ask me, where did the idea come from? There's a tiny little museum not that far from where I live, and I was walking through it and I saw these pictures of people from the 1940s and 1950s, and I thought, and they were in their 20s or 30s in the picture, and I thought, wow, they're probably all gone. You know, like all these people are probably dead now. And I wonder what their life was like. Because I'm only getting a snapshot of 1 second in time when they were 20-something, right? And I wonder what they did. I wonder what kind of life they lived. And that was where this idea came from.
I love that. It's and many people think they actually set up their museum by their Instagram feed.
Yeah.
Because it's something the life
it's
is
It's one
like.
Way.
But it's this is cinema. I mean, this is just the role playing and not the person behind that role. And we get stuck up playing that role, or people mix it up.
Yeah. So this goes back to the kid thing, right? So make every day a museum day. So when the kid says, okay, let's get done with this discussion, you talk to you, talk to each other, and then we get past this and go for ice cream in the playground. They're interested in creating museum day moments.
when do they lose it? I was just wondering, like, is that
I think in puberty?
Is that puberty? Like, when does
I think, well, every kid is different, right? So you can grow up in a very hostile environment as a child
and have it
beaten out of you literally, figuratively, or even physically. You can go through life and enter this school system where you have an amazing teacher who fosters that. Or you can have a teacher who every day tells you that it's all about structure and no more creativity and no more fun and everybody get in line and... So that just depends on the kid and their life experiences. Ideally, you could carry it through. But I think this is actually maybe one of the, we were talking about, there's the easy stuff and then there's the stuff that you have to dig through, which gets you to the great stuff. And maybe this is part of the human experience that you start off with this awareness, you're born with this awareness, and it can be fostered. And then part of the life challenge is to re-remember it or do your best to remember it all the way through. And then rediscover it and bring it back to your life. Because honestly, when you encounter an obstacle and you go beyond the obstacle, that's when you really grow. And that's when your sense of what you are capable of grows also. So I recently spoke at something called the World Leadership Summit. 15,000 people. I spoke right after Barack Obama. So I was the guy who spoke after the most famous presidential orator in the last, who knows how many decades, right? And I will tell you that I've spoken thousands of times. I'm never nervous when I speak because I know my topic, I live my topic, etc. But when you follow up that guy and you're standing there in front of 15,000 people, and you also have just, I had an 18-minute time slot, which I never speak for 18 minutes because I like to tell stories and I like to take people on a journey, right? Mm. I will tell you that it was not the same carefree, casual experience of going up on that stage as it normally is.
No, you breathe differently.
You breathe a little differently, right? But I will tell you, so this week I spoke to 5,000 people at an entrepreneurship and self-development conference. I didn't even prepare. I was so calm and so comfortable that it was going to be no issue, right? Because I had just come off of this other experience which really pushed me. And, you know, this applies in all aspects of life. When I used to, as I said, run 26 flights of stairs up and down, the idea of playing a single match of volleyball, which was going to last for 42 minutes or so, not a problem because I've spent all winter running 26 flights of stairs up and down, right? So I guess my point is, yeah, we encounter these obstacles, these barriers to our happiness at times. Mm-hmm. But when you get beyond these, you're bigger and stronger and faster emotionally, intellectually than you ever were before. Mm-hmm. And this lets you take your life in whole new directions you couldn't imagine.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So don't run from these, you know?
You need them to grow, and we tend to think it's about the pleasure. It's not. It's about like leaving the comfort zone, taking one step out of it, and then see what it's like.
Yeah, take the baby steps.
Yeah. Sometimes that is the pleasure, is taking on an obstacle, a challenge. And I think one of the keys to that as it relates to moving, you were asking before about what does it take to move our life in these new directions, having an understanding that learning is not linear. So if you want to play guitar, right, your first lesson, you are not going to be good, right? I mean, you're not going to be as brilliant as the instructor, of course, because they've been doing this a while, right? But what happens in learning is that it's tough, and then there's like a breakthrough. Mm. And so learning tends to be exponential, not linear. It's language learning is the same way. It's not like, oh, today I learned two words in Spanish, and the next day I learned four, or then I learned two today, and then two tomorrow, and then two the next day, and then two the next day. No, it's all of a sudden there's a breakthrough, and now you comprehend, right? And this applies to whether you're training for a marathon or whether you're trying to learn another language or learn a guitar. And so knowing that in advance keeps you grounded, that I'm going to have to sort of work through the mud for the first few effort endeavors, right? Whether that's hours or weeks or whatever. But trust that it will kick. There's going to be this cataclysmic moment where all of a sudden learning becomes exponential, right? And I think this is one of the challenges of Instagram, right? And social media in general. It used to be a problem because you used to watch VH1 and you'd see the story of a celebrity. And in 30 minutes, they would take them from nobody knows who they are, they're a baby, up, and then 30 minutes later, they're like a rock star. And so we all think that, all right, 30 minutes, I can change my life to be a rock star, right? This is so easy. And then as I said, on Instagram, social media, we see these pictures and think, oh, that's how easy, it just happens instantly. No, it doesn't, right? But that doesn't mean you shouldn't do it.
You better enjoy the ride.
Yeah. Oh, great expression, right? Yeah. Because if all you're focusing on is the moment when I'm fluent in Spanish, or the moment when I can play a spectacular guitar lick, trust me, it's going to be very disappointing because the joy is the whole process, not that final moment of the guitar lick. Yeah.
Nice. So we're hitting the 1 hour deadline. We're driving to that. We have a couple of minutes left, and we always ask our guests, like, where do they get their inspiration from? And we already caught it a bit between the lines, but is there something specifically where you said, this is usually my source for inspiration for writing something new, for doing something new?
Yeah, so I don't write anything unless it is just screaming to be written. I don't like writing on demand, and I would never write a book just because, oh, it's been 18 months or 2 years or 5 years, we really would like you to write another book. Mm. Never do that. Because it's very critical to me that whatever comes out of me or through me is something that is going to have tremendous value to the reader, right? And I will tell you that, so my inspiration comes from different sources in different times. I find tremendous insight by being in nature. The Ahas books that I've written, where each page is a single concept or every two pages is its own unique idea and thought. Most of those come from walking on the ocean or being out in my kayak by myself. And I'll just be like, oh, wow, that's a cool thought, right? Mm-hmm. And so I love those formats of book. I've written three of those, and I love those because on every page there's something that's small, but I didn't need to write it all in a story, right? I could just take these individual things and share them. But that said, every once in a while there is something that is screaming to come out, and I have a third cafe book coming out in October. And this book is entirely based on things that I have been struggling with for the last 2 years. I mean, really struggling with around aging and around getting to this point in my life. And struggling so much that I was not sure I would find my answers. And for whatever reason, something said to me, sit down and start writing about this, right? And in the process of writing, I have found the answers that I was seeking for 2 years. And my hope is that other people who are in the same situation as I was in will find the answers, or some of the answers at least, or at least starting points for the answers for themselves as well. So yeah, it comes from different sources, but usually it comes from something cataclysmic like this for myself. Yeah.
Well,
is there anything that you can share about, like, and I like that you said you have also logistics at home. It's not only the big five for life you're discussing at home. That's good.
I'm actually dying to see Infinity Wars Part 2, by the way. So.
Is there anything like you have certain routines, like the non-negotiables you have, but stuff you do for yourself to like know when you have rough times that brings you through that rough time, like a routine you stick to or something that you do?
Yeah, so I mentioned kayaking very briefly. This is something that I picked up a few years ago. This to me is one of the fantastic tools to keep myself in balance, right? It's great physical exercise. It is great emotional exercise. It's great just to be in nature. Nature is such the ultimate reminder that, hey, you know those problems you think are so big? You are a microscopic piece of microscopic sand in the entire time frame, right? And so being out in the waterways to me is just such a great reminder of that, because I'll look down and I'll see this tiny little minnow swimming along. I'm like, what is that dude thinking right now? You know, like, what? Is he worrying about anything, or is he just like, this is the greatest game ever? And in conjunction with that, I love looking out at night at the stars. The stars to me, I'll be taking out the garbage. I'll be wheeling out these trash cans towards my curb, and I will look up, and there is not a problem that I'm having that day, which I can honestly, that my ego cannot honestly hang on to, like, oh, our problems are so big, when I look up. Because it's just the ultimate reminder that, dude, like, you know, I don't remember the exact math, but it's something like what you can see with the naked eye. If there's, on a perfectly clear night when it's completely dark out, no outside light interference, and it looks like there's millions of stars, what you can actually see is about 3,000 stars with the naked eye on a 180-degree field. That is, to put it in somewhat perspective, like 0.00000005% of what is in our galaxy, right? Okay. And there's 125 billion galaxies beyond that. I mean, when you start thinking in those terms, you're like, okay, you know what? That email, not that important. So that's a great centering tool.
I love that. Yeah. I think we should leave it with that picture.
Fantastic.
Yes. Something.
No, it's just wonderful.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to spend some time with you today. It's been a treat for me.
Thank you so much.
It's been great being here. We'll have to do this again.
A wonderful Monday morning. Thank you so much, John.
Couldn't start any better.